This is Will Brehm from Fresh Ed. I'm here to host a show for the Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College at Arizona State University, where a group of scholars have come together to respond to the student climate strikes around the world. School students all over the globe have declared a climate emergency. For some time now, they've been striking for immediate and effective action to stop global warming and secure the habitability of our planet. Greta Thunberg is perhaps the most recognizable student protesting. You've probably seen her moving speech at the UN last month. So, in the context where students are skipping school to protest, what role do teachers play? One group of university professors who have thought deeply about this question have recently launched a call to action for educators. It asks signatories to transform their pedagogies and curricula, realign research agendas, and reformulate policy frameworks, all in line with the climate crisis and other environmental challenges facing our globe. In short, signatories are asked to voice their concerns any way they can in their professional work, in and outside of the classroom. By the end of September, over 1,500 educators already signed the call to action. To give more insight into the backstory of this call to action, I spoke with the three professors spearheading the effort.
Gustavo Fishman, Professor, Education Policy and Evaluation at Arizona State University.
Daniel Fisher, Assistant Professor at the School of Sustainability, Arizona State University.
Yvette Silova, Professor of Education Policy and Evaluation at Teachers College in Arizona State University and also the Director of the Center for Advanced Studies in Global Education here.
I hope my conversation with Yvette, Gustavo, and Daniel provide context to the call to action. And of course, if you are an educator, please consider signing the call to action right away. We need everyone's help. Three of you have been involved in this project, sort of connecting education and sustainability, holding various conferences. So I want to know just quickly sort of how you would describe your role in this project.
In 2017, with Yvette, we co-organized the first symposium on global learning metrics as CIS-sponsored event, the CIS, the Comparative International Education Society sponsor event at ASU. And we were very pleased with the turnover, the quality of the conversations and the discussions, and also very surprised with the number of people that attended the event. We didn't know that there were so many people working on global learning metrics. But at that time, the discussion was, should we use global learning metrics? Are they usable, valuable, relevant, and so on? And one of the conclusions of that event was that we needed to continue this conversation. And based on that, we applied for conference grant for the Spencer Foundation. We got that grant, but in this second opportunity, we tried to focus more on what to do or how to use the global learning metrics in relationship with other indicators in more proactive ways and trying to advance certain issues in relation with the sustainability, the sustainable development goals, discussions about the relevance of these metrics. And one point of interest for the organizing group was the lack of dialogue among scholars with policymakers, with the producers of the test, and with teachers, with NGOs. And so we convened a smaller group, selecting people, trying to have that across sectors and across stakeholders' perspective conversation. And so that happened last year in 2018, and it was a very interesting, a very different type of symposium. One was very large with lots of papers presenting. The second was smaller, but with a very focused discussion, where the issue or the big conclusion is we cannot ignore issues of sustainability and the environmental crisis, and we need to re-engage the discussion of global learning metrics in relationship to sustainability.
So you basically have been part of the lead behind this multi-year project.
Yes, in collaboration with Yvette and many other people.
So, Daniel, what about yourself? Your sort of role in this project, how you were involved?
Well, I joined ASU only in August last year. So I haven't been here for longer than 8 months now. And this symposium took place, I think, in the second or third month after my arrival here in the States. And I come actually from a community of environmental and sustainability education that has addressed these kinds of issues for a long time. But we've ever since struggled with impact on mainstream educational policymaking, I would say. And I was thrilled by that symposium to see how a completely different community of educational scholars working on global learning metrics took on these issues and the momentum that this symposium created. And that actually drew me into this process. And I met Yvette and Gustavo, and they invited me to join this process and to co-draft this statement.
And Yvette?
When we organized the first symposium in 2017, I think to me the most interesting realization was how highly contested was the discussion around global learning metrics. So it became clear that there was a consensus globally about how to measure access to education, but there was no consensus whatsoever how to measure quality of education. And so there is this major pressure from large international organizations like OECD or the World Bank to use large-scale assessments, student achievement tests to measure education quality. And as a result, a lot of really important education-related aspects are falling through the cracks. And when we bring the discussion into the SDG 4 conversation, Sustainable Development Goals, then it becomes very clear that the SDG 4.7, which has to do with environment, which has to do with social justice, sustainable lifestyle, all of this in relation to education falls through the cracks only because it's difficult to measure. And so I think our attempts through these series of these two symposia was to really focus on the SDG 4.7 and see how we as an education community can really shift the focus away from literacy and numeracy alone and look at education more comprehensively in relation to sustainability, environmental impacts, in relation to health indicators, and et cetera. And I think also kind of a secondary, but maybe equally important also concern was delinking education from economic growth. Again, something that drives international development agenda very forcefully and really displaces and disconnects education from all the other important areas like environmental sustainability.
It seems like a pretty large agenda. Yeah, I mean, in like one statement is going to try and de-link education from economic growth, address sustainability, address human rights and gender equality. And I mean, 4.7 is sort of this hodgepodge of sort of everything that didn't fit anywhere else, it seems like.
I see it almost as a reset button, you know, something that could bring political urgency to the conversations on education. It's not only about education and economic growth, and it's really about a much broader picture. So in my mind, we can't really continue the business as usual when the planet is basically dying and the humankind is on the verge of extinction. And it just doesn't make much sense to keep focusing as researchers and educators on increasing our literacy and numeracy scores among the students, because kind of at the end of the day, you know, does it really matter whether we die on a damaged earth, literate and numerate, right? Or how literate and numerate we are as we die. or become extinct.
I would actually like to add to that, and first of all, echo what Iveta said, but also add that I agree to some extent, Will, with your comment that this entails a lot, and that this is actually kind of a bucket target. At the same time, I would like to stress that in my reading, target 4.7 is one of the boldest targets that you find in all the Sustainable Development Goals, as it really talks about ensuring that all learners acquire this knowledge by 2030. This is a very strong and ambitious statement. So I think that gives also some legitimacy to people advocating for a stronger recognition of sustainability in educational systems.
So, I mean, 4.7 is certainly ambitious, and the goal itself is this idea of all learners. And I guess when it gets operationalized, at least, you know, in terms of the indicators of 4.7, it does end up becoming all about school level, all about formal education, all about sort of the inputs to education rather than potential outcomes such as, you know, ensuring quality or maybe a larger outcome like, you know, reducing the environmental destruction, which might be a harder one to measure. So I guess the question I have is, you know, is the goal of this project where you started with thinking about global learning metrics and sort of coming to the realization that there's no consensus over quality, and particularly with these bold sub-goal of 4.7 not having any clear measures, is the goal then of this project to go back to global learning metrics and sort of construct measurements of, say, 4.7 or, you know, or of something else to measure quality in some way that can reach consensus? Is that the goal here?
I'm not sure if that's the goal. What happened is in the second symposium, one of the strong conclusions of the group after exploring different ideas, but one idea that emerged as relevant is the discussion of global learning metrics in isolation of other very important situations, and particularly around sustainability in relationship of the Sustainable Development Goals, was a mistake. And so we should meet the challenge or the demand of saying with as much clarity as possible, we have to start doing things in a very different way. In this case, the notions of the global learning metrics or the international large-scale assessments became, or the recognition of the group was, these instruments are driving a lot of the debate around educational reform. And we don't think that we can address issues of sustainability without paying attention to education. So if the global learning metrics and the international large-scale assessments are driving or influencing or framing, that's a different discussion, but you know, there is a close relationship. So we should try to move or demand that if we are going to use the global learning metrics and we are going to be spending all this money in international large-scale assessment, ignoring sustainability while we use that is a mistake. So kind of that was the conclusion, the recommendation. So this action, this initiative that we are developing right now, it is more in response to that demand that emerged from the group. But Iveta could say something completely different.
Well, not necessarily. I support Gustavo. And there is also among the group, I don't think there was also necessarily was a consensus whether global learning metrics are even feasible and whether they really are desirable. Yet, sadly, metrics are driving policymaking at the moment. And if we do ignore this conversation on setting metrics and developing targets, then I think we also in a way, contribute to business as usual in education. So we will then continue education to unfold on the same path as it was. So even if we don't believe in the global learning metrics, getting the environmental agenda into them, I think, is extremely important.
So this statement that you are currently preparing among this group that you brought together after a few years discussing global learning metrics, discussing sustainability, discussing SDGs, who is it for? Who is, you know, the intended audience? Who is going to, say, read this statement and use it in any practical sense?
So I think first and for all, we had in mind the research community where that we are part of ourselves. And I think one of the concerns is that we are so, as a research community, especially comparative and international education community, we are so currently preoccupied with global education trends like student achievement tests, competitive education league tables, global ranking exercises, best practices, that we lose sight of the larger picture. We lose sight that we are kind of at this brink of environmental collapse. So rather than focusing on these global education trends, it's a call for political action to, well, it's a call to refocus our research agendas on things that are perhaps of much more significant political urgency at the moment. But I think we also discussed, and maybe I will let Gustavo and Daniel talk about it, we actually discussed that we would like to address this call to a larger education community and not only researchers.
Yeah, and I think that this is an audience that we want to reach and to express our solidarity with all the students that are demanding, you know, immediate action. Perhaps they are not our students at the university, but they are, you know, there is, you know, as educators, we have to position ourselves responding to the current demand. And we, minimally, we should express solidarity. If we are able also to provide suggestions for immediate action, for changes in educational policies, for changes in educational curriculum, for changes in, you know, the orientation of the educational system, you know, that would be great. But I think that there is an ethical demand of positioning ourselves, responding to the demands of real existing students that today are saying, you know, we cannot continue doing what we are doing.
Daniel, would you like to jump in and say, talk a little bit about how you envision the sort of audience of this statement?
Well, we talked a bit about the target group or the audience that we are trying to reach with this statement or manifesto. And I think Gustavo and Iveta put it nicely when they said that it has this twofold objective. First of all, to really stand by these protesters that hit the streets on Fridays, on several other days a week now in Europe, particularly, but all around the world, not just students, but the Extinction Rebellion protests. So there is a civil movement forming that is expressing discontent, broad discontent with the inaction on climate change in particular that we are seeing today. So far, there has been solidarity has been expressed by the scientific community most broadly. So there's scientists for supporting the student protests all over the world. But we thought it was important to demonstrate our solidarity as the educational community. That's what Gustavo mentioned before. So I think that's, first of all, that's an objective in itself, to express and our support of this movement. The second, I think, important objective would be that we have to ask ourselves, what is the role of the educational system in producing this unsustainable state that we are observing right now? And what could be the contribution of the educational system in moving us forward into a more sustainable direction? So I think what this statement can do is that it can address all stakeholders that are in, to some to different extent and in different roles responsible for designing educational systems. These can be policymakers, of course, but these can also be researchers, as Iveta said before. These can be parents. These can be students that are concerned about their local school. So we don't really have a specific audience, but we really call on these people that are responsible or have a stake in designing educational systems, asking this very question and coming back to 4.7, what would an educational system have to look like that actually is capable of delivering social change and acquiring all learners with these knowledges and skills that they need to act more sustainably. So how can an educational system look like that is actually conducive to change and not reproducing the world of yesterday, which is largely with its devastating, unsustainable consequences.
I agree with Daniel. We cannot continue to do more of the same and reproduce the so-called best practices when we know at this point in time that they have led us to this brink of the environmental collapse. But I would like also this call for action or manifesto to be a challenge to the international development community as well, especially for all of those colleagues that we work with who are working in the field of education in the context of international development. And I think they should be part of this conversation as well, because they really also need to rethink the practices that they engage with.
I'd like to actually ask for some specifics about these two different questions that Daniel raised. One being that the current education system is sort of partly to blame for creating these very unsustainable aspects that we see now, the massive earth system changes that we're seeing now. And then the second thing is, well, how can we re-envision education to sort of create more sustainable outcomes? So first, how is it that education, schooling in particular, has led to this point where students are protesting climate change?
I don't know. That is the honest answer for me. But clearly, our educational systems in general, and always there are these different schools that do things well. As far as I know, sustainability, environmental crisis, inequalities, racism, different forms of oppression are, for the most part, ignored. And that is not a very good educational practice. So by not engaging teachers, students, and educational communities at large in these discussions, we are not contributing to solve any problem. We are participating in the problem, but not working towards finding better solutions. So it's not that, I don't think that any of us is blaming schools for, but there is a responsibility that is not being assumed, and that is part of the intentionality of this group or of us, because the manifesto is produced by people. The intentionality is to say, well, you know, we have to start doing things in a very different way, in a more public way, in a more engaging way, in a more responsible way. So I think that is the pedagogical side of the answer.
And before we jump into other people, Gustavo, do you have any sort of, you know, you say do things differently, and I guess the question I would have is, what things?
Based on punishment and the idea that schools are a machine that transfer knowledge, you know, we have hundreds of years of evidence that is not really a good model of education. And on top of that, ignoring that the planet is at risk of collapsing, that seems like a very bad, that's a very bad pedagogical model. So just not doing those three things will be doing things in a very, very different way.
And maybe, Daniel, how would you talk about the way in which school is implicated in environmental unsustainability?
Well, I I can only refer to some very excellent analyses of these problems that have been provided already almost 30 years ago by people like David Orr in his book Earth in Mind. To give you an example of one of his most famous speeches, in 1990 he addressed the commencing address to the class of 1990. He held a remarkable speech to all of the graduate students, pointing to very problematic tendencies that we are observing today. He speaks about species extinction, for example, loss of biodiversity, temperature increases, the acidification of oceans, etc. So all kinds of problematic tendencies that we are observing. And he says, and this is really remarkable, I think, it is worth noting that this is not the work of ignorant people. It is rather largely the result of work by people with bachelor's, master degrees, PhDs. So it's actually the educational system that is producing people who are making these decisions that have brought us here. He says, and what he talks about largely in his book, is that we have to revisit the purpose of education. And he says, without significant precautions, education can just equip people to be more effective vandals on Earth. And I think this is a very strong statement that points or that cuts right to the chase, and this is the purpose of educational systems.
I'll add a follow-up. I mean, it sounds like it's a critique of sort of the political economy, of the sort of capitalist system in which the education institutions that exist are producing people to operate within that capitalist system, which then leads to, you know, this focus on growth, this focus on careerism, this focus on rates of return, and all of that might be good for one's lifespan. But when we think of, you know, the globe in a very different time scale, these are actually purposes that are counterproductive to the time scale of the globe, or something like this.
Just to add with one example, I mean, one colleague from Austria, he did a very profound analysis of a very in-depth of one just ordinary classroom lesson, which was on fair trade and all the why fair trade is a good thing and why it can help to bridge the global north, global south divide, etc., why it's sustainable. And what he was observing in that lesson is that students were basically taught about these issues, maybe with some interactive and modern pedagogy in use. But afterwards, they had to sit a test, basically, where they were assigned scores and grades. So what is that, what they are actually learning? So they are learning about one thing, about solidarity, global solidarity, and then they are competing with each other for the best grades. And he said that this is so deeply ingrained into the educational system that we don't really acknowledge anymore how we are being socialized into these very unsolidaric patterns that have been part of the problem.
And Iveta?
Yeah, I just will add a little bit. So I also agree with both Gustavo and with Danielle. So this is this modern education, modern schooling, perhaps also situated within a Western paradigm too, that is highly problematic, that really focuses on economic growth, technocratic determinism, on human exceptionalism. I think that's another key issue here, liberal individualism over environmental concerns, right? And over kind of more relational, maybe situating of the human within life on Earth. And it's really problematic that most of our effort so far really has been based on this assumption that improving existing forms of education will positively impact environmental sustainability. So we hear all the time, if we only get more kids to school, if we only raise their literacy and numeracy achievement scores, then we will get closer to achieving SDGs or positively impacting environmental sustainability. And I think this assumption is really surprising, and it's also very highly problematic, given that we actually have now the world has been the most educated it has ever been in the history, and yet we are nearest to environmental breakdown. So I think that really kind of reaffirms to me that education really is at the core of the problems that we are facing. And we may as well acknowledge and admit it and begin addressing this big problem.
moving on to this second question that is probably a bit more challenging. And I'd like to just sort of hear what your thoughts are as you are beginning the writing process, Daniel, but also Yvette and Gustavo, because this does seem like a collective process. So if we reimagine education and we take that charge seriously of education has been partly to blame or for all sorts of reasons being, you know, creating students who are more focused on individualism and constantly competing with one another and seeing a clear separation between human and non-human things and life. So what can be different? How do we, you know, is it abolish grades? Is that the sort of very sort of simple functional solution here? Or are we, you know, how do you reimagine it, I guess? Where are your ideas at this point in time?
First of all, there is no cut and dry solution to that answer to that question, right? There's no model out there that we can just take and roll out all across the globe and this will solve it. So this has to be said first of all. And I'm also hesitant to get too specific in the statement about requiring or requesting very specific changes in the education system. I think the main purpose of this statement should really be to facilitate, to kick off a conversation about these issues and not just leave it to the expert groups who has to figure out the indicators for 4.7 now. So this is as a broader framing. But I think, of course, there are good reasons to ask that question. I think we should include in this statement or convey a vision of how this could look like. So to be a bit more specific than just pointing to the problems and saying, okay, let's have an open conversation about how we can imagine a different education system. But I would like to say that there are good examples. There's a lot of research done on how sustainability can be conceived of not just as an add-on or bolt-on approach to education systems. We add, I don't know, a project, we add maybe a new subject, or we just add something to the existing education system. This is termed a bolt-on approach, but how it can really be operationalized as a built-in idea or principle that is at the heart of every decision that we make when we design educational systems. I'm just pointing to the whole school approach that is also one of the five high priority areas in the Global Action Program on Education for Sustainable Development. There are very impressive, inspirational examples of schools that have managed to create bonds with the communities that they are in. So I think some of the problems that we're observing is that education so far is not really problem solving in its approach. It's delocalized, so we're not really concerned with, not sufficiently concerned with the problems that we're facing in our communities and what sustainability challenges they pose and how we can address these challenges. And it's unconnected. It's treated in different subjects that all have their own rationales, but leave it up to the students kind of to make sense of that, just to point to three problems. And I think whole school approaches, for example, can be a very powerful approach to address these issues. We have case studies, multiple case studies. There's knowledge out there that we just have to, I think, bring into the conversation.
Yvette Solova, Gustavo Fishman, and Daniel Fisher work at Arizona State University. The call to action can be found at educators-4-climate-action.org. If you're an educator, please consider signing the call to action. Today's show was produced by Lushik Waba. The research reported here was made possible, in part, by grants from the Spencer Foundation and the Open Society Foundations. The views expressed are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Spencer Foundation, Open Society Foundations, or the Center for Advanced Studies in Global Education at the Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College at Arizona State University. I'm Will Brehm, and please be sure to check out my podcast at freshedpodcast.com.